Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
We brewed it too, we're bringing that fire. Talking real talk, Kentucky's on fire. From bourbon to ball games, we got that flow. On the We Do This Too podcast, yeah, you know. From country roads to the city lights, they bring the heat, man, every night. We do this too, let's make it clear. If you ain't listening, you ain't here.
Welcome back, y'all. It's another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. And as always, we are presented to you in partnership with brands that we feel represent the very best of the outdoor industry. So before we get started, we'd like to give a special shout out to Moultrie Products, Uhler's Archery, Threads Custom Bowstrings, G5 Outdoors, Blackburn Apparel Company, Deer Pip Scents and Lures, Vision Clothing, Bluebird Waterfowl Company, Angry Chicken Outdoors, Alps Outdoors, and last but certainly not least, a special shout out to the good folks over at Briley's for leaving a legacy of shooting innovation. Whether you need new cameras to elevate the scouting experience, new arrows, or anything for your archery setups, clothing, scent, or whatever it may be, as a supporter of the podcast, you can use promo code WDTTPROMO, that's WDTTPROMO, for 15% off anything on the website at Uhler'sArchery.com. Some exclusions may apply. With that being said, let's dive into another episode of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast with your host, Mr. Courtney Williams.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Williamson, a.k.a. C. Will. I've got a super special guest on today. Mr. Miles Jackson, Jackson Legacy Barbecue. I actually had his brother on about a month, maybe a month and a half ago, to discuss some things with him, you know. So here's his little brother. Just had a birthday, so I got him on today to kind of tell his story about how he grew up in Bartow, Georgia, how he made the move to Kentucky, man. So, Mr. Jackson, how you doing today, brother?
Every day is an amazing day, Courtney. How about you?
I'm good, man. They say blessed, black, and highly favored, my brother.
Ain't that right?
Ain't that right? Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. It's like I said, it's been a long time coming. We had to cancel a few. But, you know, we're here. God put us here. So we're going to make the most of it. Every day on top of the ground is a good day. So
all right,
we're going to make the most of it. So we're going to take it back to the beginning, dog, all the way back. Growing up,
man,
in Bartow, Georgia.
Yeah.
How was it growing up there? And how did it, you know, hunting shape your childhood?
And as far as hunting, fishing, doing stuff all outdoors, I can't even really remember a time that I was not doing those things, especially when it came to fishing. I remember my first deer and stuff. But growing up in Bartow, that's an interesting town. So many big deer all over the place. It's like prime time spots in Georgia. Real small town, a bunch of, you know, agriculture heavy out there. And we're part of a hunting club. So kind of been in that since I've been a youngin', and helping kind of develop the land. And that's really how we learned a lot of the tactics and strategies that we use to even continue to hunt today. So yeah, I mean, it was amazing growing up down there and being able to enjoy that whole outdoor experience of the hunting, the fishing, just kind of what it is to live in the country.
For sure. Yeah. You grew up, you know, like I did. I grew up in a real small town here.
Right.
Since you're from here now, Magnolia, that's where I grew up. That little town. You know, big on agriculture, always has been. You know, I grew up on a tobacco farm. I'm actually gonna take your brother out there sometime this week. That he's gonna help me do some stuff out there. You're more than welcome to come with him if you got time. Kind of show you around out there and whatever. But you know, something about growing up in a small town that just kind of puts that, if you grew up in a hunting family, you know,
yeah,
that small town feel, you know, everybody knows everybody. Everybody knows everybody's business, but
right,
you've all got that one thing in common with agriculture and hunting, you know.
And it brings it. I mean, down there, you know, deep rural Georgia, there's, of course, still going to be those cultural, you know, racial tensions and stuff that exist. But hunting and fishing, like outdoors in general, was, they were the two things that really did kind of bridge the gap. You know, we all meet up at the processor, and that's kind of the places where you can be cordial. You know, we have the wild game dinners. You can be cordial at those places. You know, you go to the conventions and, you know, the tension's not there. So, yeah, it definitely is one of those things that is a great connector.
Yeah, for sure, man. So yeah. Who first introduced you to the outdoors? Was it something that you just went and did by yourself? Was it your uncle, your dad, your granddad, your dad?
Yeah. Okay. It was my dad for sure. Been fishing since we were little jits. I remember the first time I even got into a boat. It was Lake Shackleback up here. I think it was in Indiana. And it had a hole in the bottom of it. And I thought that, you know, if it was a hole in the boat, it was just going to flip over. But that wasn't the case. So we was out there freaking out and we got out. But from there to, you know, building shooting houses, dissing up fields and everything, really kind of that foundation was set by my dad.
That's what's up. So, yeah. So my pops got me into it as well. You know, my dad grew up in a little small town outside of Memphis, Tennessee called Somerville, Tennessee, and Cottontown, you know, so I'd go down there summers, you know, sometimes Thanksgiving and Christmases, you know, it was a big shock for me to see cotton because I'd never seen it before, because all we were surrounded were, you know, tobacco, you know, soybeans and corn, you know, so it was cool to go down there and see something different. So we grew up small game. I was a small game. I didn't start deer hunting until I was in college because dad didn't deer hunt. and there was no deer or turkey on my place, you know, where I grew up. But now, man, it's crawling with them. Anything you want to hunt, you know, I got. So he got me into it, man, and that passion just it stuck with me, man. So I get so let's talk about some of the values, you know, that being an outdoors instills in you. You know, you got your patience, you got your disciplines, you got your right. hard work, you know, that you do. Yeah, especially growing up in a small town, if you ever worked on a farm, you know, all those are key. So how did that carry over in other areas of your life?
And that carried over directly into athletics to start with. You know, that was the first, I guess you could say, career that I embarked on. And, you know, going through high school athletics and then going through college athletics as well. It's like the things like patience, because just because you're good doesn't mean you're going to get on the field. When you get to college, you know, you're still playing that political game. Still being disciplined enough to show up to the workouts to eat like you're supposed to you know, be disciplined in the play, in the playbook. That's there. And then something that I feel is interesting about hunting is understanding that there's two sides. There's one thing I like to explain is the worst part about hunting, in my opinion, is actually killing the animal, right? That's not your favorite part. It's really about the whole process and journey.
Absolutely.
But it's kind of the same way in other areas where it's, there might be something you don't want to do, but you know that's just part of the process. So being able to kind of sit on both sides of that.
Yeah, my daddy used to always say it's not always about the destination, it's about the journey.
Yeah.
You know, and never really understood what that meant until I got a little bit older, and then it started clicking. So like I tell people, man, you know, the my favorite part of the hunt is everything that leads up to it. When I'm out there scouting, when I'm out there, you know, putting my corn out, when I'm out there checking my cameras, you know, moving cameras, trying to figure out inventory, you know, trying to move out and everything. Yes, the deer that I harvest is the bonus, but everything leading up to that, I'll be able to tell that story to somebody that might be interested in hunting or might, you know, already in the hunting, you know, just tell them that story. Like, man, that's a cool story. It's like, yeah, man, you know, this happened. I end up harvesting this deer at this place, but I got that story to tell. And, you know, that just sometimes brings people together, those stories that you tell.
Yeah. And I was able to see it also kind of reflect really well within, you know, the different businesses and things I started and I've done. Within the family, I've done separately. It's like being a hunter, you always know that just because you have property doesn't mean you have stuff on it. Like I say, y'all didn't have deer, I didn't have turkeys and stuff like that before, but you can build a foundation for the area. And that takes time. We know that, just like, you know, trying to develop any type of land. But as you start to develop it and things start to come, I guess you could say, into play, you're able to just, you have to adjust, but you're able to kind of create the foundation that you want. So just like in my business, you come as a startup and you kind of have no foundation. You kind of know what you know, but you're starting to develop it more and things are coming. New opportunities are coming. More animals are coming onto the property. It might look different, right? But you still got to scout. It comes to sales. It comes to marketing. You know, that whole process of from idea to execution, right? Hunting season don't start in September. It don't start in August. I mean, it don't start in October. It starts as soon as the season's over.
So the day the season's over with.
It's the same concept. The day the season's over with, it starts. So, yeah, man. But how do you think that, you know, it might have played a major role in your morality growing up? And just kind of
it was huge for me, man, because me growing up, man, you know, I never seen anybody look like me. For starters, that were on any outdoor shows or anything like that. So I knew I loved the outdoors, but there for a while, I kind of hid it from people because I didn't know how they would take me as an African-American hunter.
Yeah.
Outdoorsmen, y'all could tell them I fish all day long and everything's cool. But as soon as I tell them I hunt, they kind of look at me sideways like, you hunt? Like, I always got that. So, that hard work that I grew up with on the farm and that patience that I was taught, you know, in the outdoors and playing sports growing up. You know, I played basketball, baseball growing up. So that taught me a lot of discipline and the patience both. So that carried on to my, you know, adult years. And it's something that I'm now teaching my son, you know, who's playing sports as well, the discipline that comes with it, and telling them, you know, the patience that comes with it, but also what you do outside of your school, it's a privilege. It's not a right. Yeah. So if you messing up in the classroom, acting a fool at school, that's not my will take away from you. You will not be playing football. You will not be playing baseball. You will not be playing basketball, and you will not be going in the woods with daddy on Saturday morning. So that hard work, that patience, that discipline that you apply when you're on that field, you also need to apply in the classroom, or daddy's taking all that away.
Right. And that even kind of just proves the point that part of hunting is really who you are, right?
Right.
You are an outdoorsman. I feel like the outdoors has really shaped who I am as a person, not just I like to hunt, right? Or just I like to fish. It's cool to take pictures with fish or, you know, get something out on the wall. But it's like, no, even during times where I feel super stressed, I might just go fishing just for that, right? Mm-hmm. No expectation to even catch anything. So just kind of like brings peace, stability, you know, really kind of all of that. Mm-hmm. And that's the place where I feel like I can truly talk to God and actually hear him.
I was just about to say that. So,
yeah.
So me personally, man, you know, I'm a very religious person. You know, I grew up in a very religious family. You know, I got away from God there for a little bit, like some of us do, but he'll bring you back. He always will. Yeah. And just, I was talking to your brother. I call your brother Reverend Jackson now.
Yeah.
call them, you know, those little TikToks and stuff that he puts out, you know, those little praise breaks, man.
Yeah.
They're very, very inspired. And like somebody might out there in the social media world might need to hear that. You know, I love listening to him and I love, you know, listening to what he's got to say, stuff like that. So like the days that I wasn't in the church physically, I was in the church spiritually and mentally because I'm out there in the woods talking to him. In an environment that he created.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So
right.
I'm not physically in a church. I'm in my church in that deer blind.
Yeah. And intimately creating a personal relationship with God.
Right.
I outside of the church. And I'm kind of in that transition, right? Coming back closer to God. I say I grew up super religious as well. And just kind of in those middle college years, I don't know. I just kind of looked up one day and I was like, oh, wait a minute. And then things just kind of came crashing down in my life. And then when I thought I was at rock bottom, or what felt like rock bottom, that's kind of when, you know, God really talked to me. And that was the first time I was able to hear him clearly. And it was in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I really said to myself, like, oh, that was God. Like, there's what I heard and what was said to me is just like, there's nobody other than that. And just since then, I've been kind of back on my walking path to coming closer to God.
I get that. It was my college years too, homie. So, yeah. You know, I got to school and, you know, growing up in a small town, you know, here in Magnolia, I went to Bowling Green, which is 45 minutes an hour down the road, Western Kentucky University. I thought it was a big city, you know.
Yeah.
And I was grounded, I thought, from everything mom and daddy had put in, instilled in me. And then I met these guys. They call themselves the 5 percenters. I don't know if you've ever heard of them before.
Yeah.
And basically listening to everything they said at the time as a just turned 18-year-old kid, man, everything that they were saying to me made sense. You know, white people's this, white people's that, you know, they put us in chains, they did this. So there for about a year or so, maybe even longer, man, like anybody that wasn't my color, like I didn't pay mine because I was listening to everything these guys were saying, man, they were brainwashing people, man, you know. And all my friends growing up, the most of them were, you know, Caucasian. I never had a problem with them. They were my buddies. They ride for me to this day. I could give them a call. They, you know, these guys had me questioning, like, who I was hanging around. And I happened to go home one day, and my dad's Bible always stayed on the kitchen table. And my dad wasn't home. My mom wasn't home. They were at my auntie's house up in Indiana. And I came home, and dad's Bible was closed right there on the table, because every morning he'd get up and read a passage of scripture and whatever, and do his daily thing with my mom, as they have done years, you know. I ended up losing my dad in 14. But anyway, you know, I came home and took me a little nap on the couch there watching TV. And it's the middle of winter, man. And it's like 30-something degrees outside. And I wake up, man, and I'm super hot. Like, I'm burning up. Like, I'm having a hot flash, you know, like. So I'm taking clothes off. I'm sweating like a mule. And I walk outside to get some air. And I look up in the sky. And the sky is like a burgundy red, like a kind of almost like an orange, like a fire color, you know? And I'm like, am I dreaming? So I'm sitting there, like, I didn't wear glasses then, you know, I'm sitting there rubbing my eyes, look up, and it's like, what the heck is going on? You know? So I walk out in the yard, man, and just instantly something just told me to get to the ground, and I fall down on my knees. I just kind of look up to the sky, and I just started praying, you know. And so, God, whatever I'm going through right now with this, you know, because I was, you know, tugging. The devil was tugging on me hard, man.
Yeah.
But God was right there, you know, tugging back, you know. I got you. I got you. Just come back to me. I got you, you know. And the devil said, and I'll come to my side. And it was like a tug of war, man. So
wow.
I get up, walk back in the house. The Bible is open at this point. So now I'm really freaked out. So I'm like, I know that Bible was closed when I walked in here. So something told me to sit down at the table and just read what that had to say. The passage that came up that I started reading was the prodigal son passage, about how the son went off. You know, he gave him everything that he had, that he, you know, got from the father, went out, spent it all, came back home. Yeah. There's my son. Get him the best robe. And who's got the best robe in the house? The daddy. He's always going to have the best of everything because he's the dad. So that passage to me means no matter where you go in life, your daddy's always going to welcome you back home. And that passage still today sticks with me, you know, and I'm just like, all right, God, I got you, you know. I get back to Bowling Green the next night, and I go in these guys' room in the dorm. You know, they're all fatigued out and all this stuff, and got all these Muslim signs everywhere, Malcolm X posters everywhere. I said, man, I hate to tell y'all, I said, but Muhammad sounds cool and all.
Yeah.
I'm riding with Jesus on this one, homie.
Yeah.
And they tell, you know, called me everything but a child of God and said I was the dumbest person here and this and that, man. But that then, man, just showed me how powerful God is. That, yes, people, Satan's going to tug on you a little bit, but as long as you stay grounded, stay in the word, stay true, stay truthful, he'll always bring you back.
Yeah. Wow. That's powerful.
Yeah, man.
So how did, after experiencing something like that, how was like the next 4 weeks?
So the next 4 weeks, man, like I felt like there was just like this weight lifted off my shoulder, you know, like, because I was about to go down a really bad road that I wasn't prepared for at 18. I don't think I'd be prepared for it. Well, I'd be very prepared for it now because I'm in the word. I'm spiritually grounded. But then, you know, I'm 18 years old. I'm just basically an adult. You know, this is my first time being away from my parents, you know, and being in the real world, you know, experiencing college, what it has to offer. And, you know, I can see, why some of these kids nowadays get ungrounded and start moving different ways because of people tugging on them, telling them things that not necessarily are true, just stuff that they think is true and they believe it because of stuff they've experienced in the past. Because like growing up here, I'm not gonna lie, I had a great childhood here, but there were those instances where, you know, you come across those, like you said, those racial tensions, like you got there in Georgia where you had people that didn't necessarily want you to be there because it's the color of your skin, or didn't want to be around you because of the color of your skin. So when these guys were started talking about that, it resonated with me because of where I grew up. So, but once that happened, you know, those next 4 weeks I'd pass them. You know, they wouldn't say nothing to me, but I felt like I knew God was there with me. And I knew that no matter what happened, anything happened between there, I knew he was always, I knew he was right there with me. And he had been the whole time. Like, I don't know if you know this. Well, I know you know the story of Jonah. You know, when Jonah went down in the, he was running from God or whatever. And he went down in the belly of the ship, you know, that the storm came up. And everybody's freaking out or whatever. And it's like, well, there's somebody down there asleep. So they wake Jonah up. It's like, whoever your God is, call him. He's like, I don't got to call him. He's already here. Best thing for you to do, throw me overboard because he's after me.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, swallowed him down, went to the belly of the whale and all that. But it was kind of like that same instance, man. Like, I knew God was always there for me. And no matter what that I was going through at the time, it pulled me out of it, and he pulled me out of it. So for those of y'all out there that think God ain't real, just talk to him like me and you's talking right now, man. I promise you, like, whatever you're going through, just ask and you will receive. I promise you.
Yeah. That's so crazy that you say that. Because, like, growing up, something I didn't believe was that you could just talk to God like a normal person. I thought you had to speak in a certain cadence and speak a certain way and only say certain words. And then, it wasn't really till that time I had that real interaction with God, that intimate interaction with God. I was actually cussing at him. It was a bad time. I was cussing at him. Like, you know, why'd you leave me? Are you real? Like, questioning our childhood, questioning like the upbringing, questioning a lot of different things. And that's when he was like you are still my son.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like, oh wow. And that's how I knew it was God. It was just like, all right, you hear me. I don't feel invisible anymore. I actually know you're there. And just kind of since then been able to still trying really to determine which path is God's and which path is the other side still trying to tug, right? And I feel like that might be a constant battle through life, but making sure that I stay at least close to God and praying and making sure that that relationship stays, you know, priority in my life, I'm less likely to become swayed or anything like that. Or times that I do become swayed, I'm confident that God will bring me back to center.
For sure, man. I'm telling you, one thing that I've learned in my 40 years on earth, it ain't been long, but 40 years seems like a lifetime to me. But, you know, it's going to be a constant battle. As a Christian, the God's always going to be there, but the devil's always going to be tugging at you to come to his side. He's always going to try you and test you. Same way he did Job, you know, in the Bible, he's going to do to you. And it's a constant battle. But one thing I know for sure, through thick and thin, through all that, God ain't going nowhere. Yeah, he might let the devil pull you a little bit to the right, left, wherever. But at the end of the day, God's going to pull you right back to him, you know, and he's just going to look at the devil and be like, I told you. He's mine. You can pull, tug, push, whatever you want to do. He's not going nowhere. He's mine. You know, you just stay grounded, you know, stay in the word. He ain't going to let you go nowhere. I promise.
Yes, sir, for sure.
But yeah, man. So when you're not in the woods, or when you're not in the kitchen, I should say, doing your barbecue thing, right. we're gonna get into that here in a little bit. But what's your favorite kind of hunt? Well, we talked about it kind of off air, but
man, them turkeys got a hold on me. It was something about that chase when like I've always kind of like somewhat turkey hunted, but this was the first year that I really went out there and was like, all right, I'm going to try to do like a run and gun type of hunt. I got a mouth call. I had been practicing on it real strong, trying to get the cadences down and stuff. I was like, you know, okay. And I actually came up here and I hunted in Kentucky this year out there on the property and had one. Literally, I went out scouting the day before and I heard one gobble over the ridge and he started coming down the hill and I could see him coming from like 300 yards out. And I just sat on the ground by a tree and he walked probably 40 yards in front of me straight across, didn't see me. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna go out there and get him. Went out there the next day, nothing. It was radio silence for like the next week. And then I went out there on a Saturday and did a crow call out there right at daybreak. Heard that one gobble about 250 yards away. I was like, oh, I felt that crazy heart rush.
Yeah.
Went out there and he started coming in. Heard him coming up over the ridge. He was getting closer, maybe 60 yards away. And then he just stopped calling. Didn't say anything. But just that heartbeat alone, I was like, oh, this feels like this is a real adrenaline rush for real. So, yeah, I'm kind of on them turkeys right now.
Heard that, yeah. I'm a big turkey hunter as well. You know, I've missed my fair share of turkeys, but I think I got about 5 pans in here that I'm really proud of. But you know, I missed my fair share as well. But it's definitely a rush. So you got any? Every hunter has a memorable story about, you know, game that they chase. And you got any memorable stories, turkey hunting, deer hunting, whatever?
Man, too many memorable stories. Mainly a lot of them are with my one of my friends named Jaden back home. We used to do a lot of hunting together, play football together and everything. And there's been times we've been out hog hunting and we've had some run up on us and we had to go running. Dexter was out there with us. See, the most memorable was probably 2016. It was the day after I played somebody for football, but it was Saturday morning, and I was out there with my bow. The first time I went bow hunting, I didn't know any better. I was like, I'm going to use my dad's arrows this time. And I didn't use the arrows that I got the bow tuned with. They were, I think they weighed less, and they were shorter. And this buck I had been having on camera come through pretty much all summer, you know, all spring before, coming out there at the same time, and he came out there 30 yards away. He's on the right side, and I shot at him. Missed him. Okay. He didn't spook or anything, though. I was like, okay. He continued to come around, cross the creek, still walking in like a 30-yard ring right around me. Shot at him again. Missed him. I'm like, I know. I was just shooting groups this small yesterday. What's going on? It's not even clicking with the arrows. Then he comes to the left side on the third side. Missed him again. Missed that deer 3 times. And I got a picture of him on game camera looking at me when I missed him the 3rd time. So it's not a harvest, but that's definitely the most memorable story I have. Because to this day, haven't seen him on camera since.
Yeah, you gotta stick with them arrows that the bows tuned to, that's for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, man. So getting Jay. Into go ahead.
Yeah, we used to like play little games and pranks on each other all the time. And called me one morning, it's probably 8 o'clock, 8:30. Say, hey man, I need some help out here. I'm stuck. It's like, okay. So I get out of bed. I didn't go hunting that morning. And I drive out to his property and walk all the way to the back. I didn't bring the four-wheeler or nothing this way because I didn't think we were gonna be dragging deer out. And he had killed 2 of them. He was like, yeah, man, I need help dragging these deer out of here. Not even playing, he's probably like a mile and a half, 2 miles back in the woods. And we throw the deer on our shoulders like this. And we're walking. It just rained the day before, too. And it's kind of like swampy down there. So we're walking through little swamp dips and back and forth. We're sitting there yelling at each other. I'm like, why you ain't telling me that you killed two deer. I brought the four wheeler. We wouldn't have been dealing with none of this. It took 2 hours to get out of there. But yeah, it was always little funny little moments like that and stuff that we kind of endured and say we'd enjoy with each other.
Yeah, that's yeah, man, my best friend, man. We've got, dude, I can't tell you how many stories we've, yeah, how many stories we've got for like in the woods and even outside the woods, but I definitely get it. So, but we'll get into your barbecue a little bit. So, do you see a connection between hunting and barbecue? Do you see like a connection there at all? Like, is there a connection?
I think so. Both of those require patience. Both of those require patience in a very strong way. To create good food is more than just smoking. I mean, it even comes down to the wood you're chopping, right? We hand chopped a lot of our wood, especially at the beginning of our business. So from there to the hours it takes in preparation from trimming, I mean, we're trimming hundreds of, I wouldn't say hundreds of biscuits, but hundreds of pounds worth of meat. And yeah, you have that. But yeah, patience and detail. Patience, detail, strategy.
Makes sense. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because I try to, you know, see if we can bridge the gap between, you know, whatever person I'm interviewing, whatever their, you know, passion is, you know, like their job versus, yeah, you know, the outdoors. There's usually, like you said, usually somewhere in there, you know, it comes patience, it comes discipline, it comes, you know, the hard work aspect, it comes with everything that you just mentioned. So it's, yeah, like when everything comes full circle, everything that we do can be attribute of something you can take away and put to the outdoors as well. So
even down to like the very, like varying factors, like when you go hunting, you know, you're taking into account the temperature outside, the wind direction, you know, humidity, all these different factors. It's the same thing when you're smoking, right? The temperature of the fire, how hot you got to keep it, you know, whether the wood is wet or dry, the moisture of the wood that you're using, you know, all that stuff takes into account. How often are you going into the woods, leaving your scent in there, right? It makes a difference on whether the deer show up. How often are you opening the smoker? Keep it closed. You know, you want that meat to really kind of sit in there and saturate. It's kind of the similarities, man. It's all concepts.
Yeah, for sure. So what got you into cooking, like on a restaurant level? And like what inspired you to keep moving, to keep doing it?
I would definitely say my parents got me kind of into that, right? We started originally, really it's generations worth of barbecue. We officially started the business back in 2013 down in Jefferson County. And that's when we were just like, people would try our food at different festivals and people have given my brother hugs. People come back, right? Calling us on Facebook, trying to figure out where we're at. We was like, we should do this for real. Open the restaurant. And that's kind of how we got into cooking it for that. But I don't think it really, I think I was too young to really understand how significant that really was, that experience, I guess you could say. And then as I was getting older and just kind of in college, trying to figure out what career path I wanted to do, I was off starting my own business, but cooking was something that was always kind of in the rear. Like people asked me, how's the barbecue business doing? It was a little stint that we stopped around COVID. It was like, well, I would say we still do catering. Not we closed. We still do catering. Right. And really, I would say us restarting this, that idea really stemmed from my brother, for real. I had no true personal intention to be barbecuing anytime soon, but he kind of been talking about it for a minute. And as we were just, I don't know, things were going on in his life and God was kind of moving him in a certain direction, opportunities started popping up in front of us. And as we started executing those things, we're just like, it didn't make sense. I don't know. It doesn't make sense how much it started to make sense. And that's how I know it was like a God thing. Cause it was like, oh, there's no way we could pull this off within our own doings, especially not within the time frame, not with all the other factors that go into it. It was just perfect.
Yeah.
Just perfect.
I get that. I get that. Yeah. So for the people who didn't watch my episode or listen to the episode with your brother, how did Jackson Legacy get its name?
Jackson Legacy. Well, that's really kind of started from my parents. My parents were real big on teaching us about like generational wealth and want to create a strong foundation, but also leave a legacy of like the impact you want to leave in the world, right? So we have Jackson Legacy Barbecue, but that really stemmed from Jackson Legacy Creators, which was one of the first LLCs that a family had created. And Jackson Legacy Barbecue really just kind of was one of those things where we started doing the barbecue and people in the area were just enjoying it so much, it was leaving a lasting impact on the geographic region. Like, it really was. So, yeah, I would say the legacy part is even far beyond barbecue.
I understand that. Heck yeah, man. Yeah, I enjoyed the conversation me and your brother had. You know, he was breaking down how y'all got started and everything like that, and the vision that, you know, he had and how he plans to keep it moving here, you know, in the state of Kentucky. So it was very interesting. So you know, there's 1,000 different types of barbecue out there. You know, vinegar based, mustard based, tomato based. Like, what kind of barbecue do you all lean towards?
Oh man, we use a kind of a mustard base on how we actually go, you know, about our process. But a lot of people ask us what our style is, and you know, they say like, you have Memphis style, you have Texas style, you know, South Carolina style. But we always like to say we have Jackson style.
That's exactly what really, your brother said. That's
There's no other way to describe it, because it does really take a combination of what we believe to be the best of each style, along with adding our own kind of twist to it as well, and just to create this amazing experience of a barbecue product. So, yeah, the Jackson style, that's what we go by.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, he said the exact same thing. He's like, you take the best of everything and make it Jackson style. So I was like, okay, I can respect that. So I'm used to the Memphis style barbecue just because, you know, it's where my dad grew up and everything. And I also like the Kansas City type barbecue as well. So,
yeah, I spent some time out there. You got some amazing burnt ends, man.
Oh, for real. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Opening a new restaurant, I know, can't be easy. So, like, what's some of the biggest challenges that y'all face moving here to Kentucky from Georgia?
Really?
Well, California to Georgia, I should say.
Yeah, right. California to Kentucky. It's been like, man, it honestly, I'm glad we had as much support from the Hodgenville community as we did, because there were so many connections that people were able to kind of give us, help us expedite that process. But from getting licensed down to all of our equipment was still down in Georgia. That's even crazy how that happened, right? Our exit from Georgia really happened right in the midst of a hurricane that came and destroyed the whole region. And the building that we've had, it was one of the first, I think, investments my parents really made when we got down to Georgia. We've had it for years, pretty much most of my life, was destroyed. And this restaurant equipment, the stuff that we bought, and some of it was still not even used, was just sitting in there. And it was almost like we couldn't even get rid of it, trying to sell it and everything. Couldn't get rid of it. Nobody would buy it. And the opportunity came, and you know, our brother drove down there and went and actually picked that up. And it was like a two-sided situation, because we was able to see where we stored all of our stuff, right? In the midst of this move, be destroyed. Right? Yeah. Soaking in water. You don't have it. Picture albums and boxes of clothes, you know, had like hundreds of records, everything just kind of destroyed. But then on the other end of that, it's like you see your past being destroyed, but you also literally see your future right here. And that's this future we're packing into this Penske truck and headed back up to Kentucky. So that was I would say probably one of the biggest challenges was more so that transition of letting go of the things that we have done and stepping into what the future holds. And then we get here and then, you know, we get slammed on the first week that we're open. All right. You got things like that happening. So figuring out the right strategies for managing labor and things like that, man, just kind of figuring out what it is to move forward.
Yeah, you got sold out like the first couple of days that y'all were open, you know. And
yeah,
it was crazy. It surprised the heck out of me, man. So what was that experience like? Just that feeling that in a new town, a new area, like I know it had to feel good.
It felt amazing. It felt like it was supposed to happen. It felt like God had already told us it was going to happen. And it felt like a reward for staying true to his path and kind of just blindly following his direction. That's what right. It felt like in the moment. Like to the point that like tears were shed because it was just like, that just happened. Not even a couple months ago, we had no idea that we'd even be sitting here in this moment right now, right? All going through altering shifts within our lives, and in this moment, that just happened. Like, yeah.
So
I felt like it was supposed to.
So you guys have been open for a little over 2 months now. So you still feel like Kentucky is a place for y'all.
Most definitely, man. We've got so much support from the community, and even just being welcomed in. We kind of know how it is with small towns because we came from a small town. And that's not always the case, but right. I feel like it was really kind of a godsend type of thing to be sent somewhere so welcoming and to be able to run a business in a place like Hodgenville.
Right. So, backpacking off that a little bit.
Yeah.
What advice would you give someone who loves cooking, loves the outdoors, and is thinking about turning that passion into a business? What advice would you give?
The advice I'd give for want to turn a love for cooking into a restaurant from the eyes of a hunter would be, if you haven't run a food business before, the season just ended, but you still got to put your cameras out, man. Take the time to really prepare and curate your product. Make sure you can make your product really well. Because with the business, which is completely separate from your passion, right? And at a casino, I see it all the time, is there's people that are really good at what they do and not so good on the business side. If you are solid on your passion, you are solid on your product, then when these different variables and maybe obstacles pop up on the business side, you can let that kind of fizzle itself out. But what you don't want to be dealing with is trying to deal with creating a consistent product in the midst of trying to figure out the challenges of a startup at the same time. That's like, right. You don't want to do that.
I like that. Season's over, but you still got to put your cameras out.
Still got to put your cameras out, man.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yep.
So the vision, looking ahead, next 5-10 years, what's y'all's vision for the next 5 to 10 years?
Oh, man. To be honest with you, I could say a vision, right? Which within my own being would be doing multiple corporate catering gigs, right? It would be, you know, trying to get into different facilities. It would be trying to, you know, potentially open new spots. But I also know that I did not plan to be here at all doing this. And I also know that who knows what God really has in store for us. Whatever I could imagine, it could be bigger. It could be something completely different. So I would say my goal for the next 5 years would be to just listen to God and see whatever direction he wants to take it.
I love it, man. You know, you just Keep your hand in God's hand, man. That's the name of the game, man. Whatever business you in, wherever you're at spiritually, which you're walking with God, keep your hand in his hand. He'll guide you. It won't ever leave or forsake you. And I can't stress it enough to people out there, man. Like,
yeah,
just keep walking with him and he will direct your path. Like, I heard that so many times growing up in church. I can't tell you how many times, but as I got older, I started understanding it. It made more sense. So, yeah, definitely love that answer for sure. So, when people, other than a full stomach,
yeah,
when people come to eat at your restaurant, what do you hope they walk away with?
I hope they walk away with one of the greatest eating experiences they could have, right? That's truly what I think as a family, what we want is beyond just serving food. It's the Jackson experience, like the amount of love, patience, and time and dedication that we put into creating a great product. That's not for us. That's a lot, right? We do get enjoyment and fulfillment of creating a good service and good product for other people, but we want to create a good experience and bring great food. And if you can come to our establishment and experience that, then I think we fulfill the mission.
That's what's up, man. Yeah, I love coming up here.
Yeah. What you think about the brisket, man?
Man, that brisket is fire. I'm real picky when it comes to my brisket. But I'm gonna tell you, my wife will tell you the same thing.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm used to, you know, that Memphis style brisket. And then my uncle, yeah, that's what he's been cooking since we was kids. So I'm real particular when it comes to brisket, but y'all is on point. I ain't just saying that because you on here. I'm saying that because it's the truth. I told your brother the same thing. I said, I tell the truth. I said, if I don't like something, I'm going to tell you, you know. But
I expect nothing less. I really appreciate that, too. I'm glad you're able to enjoy it.
Yeah, I told him I got to come up here and get the ribs next and the chicken. I still ain't had the ribs with the chicken yet. So the pulled pork is fire.
Whoa! What?
Yeah, I ain't had it yet. Every time I come up here,
you don't even know. Okay, well that's understandable. See, they're coming for us though. That's the thing. They're coming for us. We're trying to keep up. But yeah, no. Honestly, when people come and ask us what the best thing we have is, I tell them to flip a coin. I'll choose anything on the menu. You know, blindfold yourself and throw a dart. So ribs and chicken is next. I look forward to seeing your response on that.
Yeah, I'm going to be up here this week. Trust me. As soon as I get out of school, probably Thursday, I'm riding up here.
Oh, yeah.
So be on the lookout. I might even call my order in before I drive up here. But
that's probably. I'll probably do that. Yes, sir.
But, yeah, man. So, one more question. I'll get you off here, man. I know you got some cosmic golf to go play this evening, so... If you could sum up your story as a hunter,
yeah,
a brother, a son, businessman, in one sentence. What would that sentence be?
That sentence would be, to execute properly, you have to focus and flow.
Okay, explain that.
I feel like the lack or the gap in people or in ideas and execution is we create this plan in our heads, and that's in business, that's in hunting, that is in life, that's with ourselves. We create these plans, but if those plans don't fit exactly in the gap, a lot of people don't know how to adjust. You gotta learn how to flow. You gotta learn how to focus on the step that is in front of you. Can't see the finish line if you don't see the step that's in front of you. So focus and flow as things change and come in front of you.
Miles Jackson.
That's in hunting. That's in everything, man.
Miles Jackson, ladies and gentlemen. Miles Jackson. He has spoken.
Yes, sir. Hey. It's been a pleasure. It's been amazing.
Been a pleasure, man. appreciate you. Appreciate your family, man. Like I told your brother, your mama, your daddy, everybody that I've met so far, if there's anything that I could ever do for y'all, I'm right up the road. You know, so let me know.
Yes, sir.
I'm ain't nothing but a hop, skip, and a jump up there from the ridge, as we call it. So,
yes, sir, for sure. And yeah, you it's been a great help and a great friend. So, definitely appreciate you.
Yes, sir, man. So, this podcast will be out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and my personal YouTube channel. So, you make sure you give it a like, subscribe, all that. It helps me out. It helps the channel out. If you get on Apple, there's a spot down there that you can give a 5-star review. Please give us a 5-star review. Write something if you want to, just to kind of let me know how I'm doing and everything. So, but any last words for the viewers and listeners?
Yeah, man. Hey, that's some good barbecue. That's what it says on the logo. That's some good barbecue. Focus on the flow and listen to God. That's what I have to say.
That's it, man. So Miles Jackson, ladies and gentlemen. Big game, small game, all game. We do this too.
Do this too. All right.
It's your boy, C. Will. What the hell?
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.